Now we know what it feels like to blow a big lead. Got to stay focused to get the job done. Great learning lesson, and I also love playing against Draymond. Hashtag the process.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. We are back after a couple of days off, obviously across the weekend, back to look at all the action in the NBA, reviewing Sunday's games, previewing Monday's big 11-game slate, having a look at what happened on the other days across the weekend as well, and looking at the week ahead, especially for weekly lineup leagues and for daily changes leagues, best ways to approach the league this week. So,
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. There is only one team that played across the weekend that we won't, that either didn't play Sunday or won't play Monday, and that is the Houston Rockets. So these Monday podcasts, what I like to do is talk about the teams that I wouldn't normally talk about in the review or preview sections, but for this week, there is only one of those teams, and that is the Houston Rockets. So we will talk about those guys to start things off. And talk about, you know, what there is, what sort of happened for them over the weekend. And to be honest, there's not a huge amount. Chris Paul was back and he's looked great in these first two games back. He's getting the assists. He's scoring. His minutes are limited. Yeah, but they will go back up pretty soon. Probably for the next game for the Rockets, which I believe is on Wednesday, you'll see Paul's minutes go back up. And, you know, if the fears, which I think there was some decent level of fears about how Harden and Paul would work together, especially after what we saw from Chris Paul in the preseason. And in that opening night, it's like, oh shit, this is not going to be good. These guys aren't going to work together. Paul's going to really struggle. He can't get his offense. He can't score. He can't do things. But these last two games, I think you've been pretty proud of, well, maybe not proud, maybe proud's not the right word. You've been pretty excited to see what Chris Paul has done in these two games and over the weekend. He did it again. And putting up those numbers in limited minutes. So it looks like he is going to be fine. Still not shooting the ball fantastically, but getting his shots up, scoring, getting his assists, getting his steals, and doing what needs to be done. But with Paul back, we're seeing what we all, you know, pretty much assumed would happen. That's Eric Gordon's value really start to topple. He is a guy that, at this point, he's still a 12-team league guy, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's not too much longer before he's not a 10-team guy anymore. And he might even move outside of being not a 12-team player anymore. He won't be playing the same amount of minutes that he saw with Chris Paul out. He also won't be having as many playmaking opportunities because he was running units with Harden, would sit on the bench. But now it's going to be Harden or it's going to be Paul. It's going to be one of those two guys as the point guard all 48 minutes of the game. So Gordon's role will be taken away from being a creator, a guy with a ball in his hands, a guy getting his own shot and driving and drawing all these free throws as well as hitting threes, to being that somewhat more of a secondary guy, to being a spot-up option, to being a catch-and-shoot player, not a drive-and-kick facilitator, creator, which is the sort of role that he was doing, especially when Harden was off the floor. He won't be asked to do that. So his value is going to plummet. I don't think that you'll be able to sell him high any longer, but it is worth maybe just inquiring one more time. The other guys who are going to lose a little bit of playing time, PJ Tucker and Luke Marmute, who are getting around 28 to 30 minutes a night most nights with Paul out, both of their playing times, it should come back down to sort of a mid-20s in minutes, and that eliminates a lot of their value from even, say, 14-team leagues, where they're putting up some decently consistent numbers. But if they're going from 30 minutes a night to 24 minutes a night, then a lot of that value disappears as well. As for Jim Harden, he's been brilliant without Paul. He's been brilliant with Paul. I don't think we've got too much to worry about Jim when we talk about the Rockets. But of course, that will all, you know, it'll all work itself out over the coming weeks when Paul is back playing 30, 32 minutes a night, and we get to see exactly how that all works out for Jim Harden and for the Houston Rockets. Let's have a look now at the games across the NBA for this coming week, which is Thanksgiving week, of course. And I'm going to get this question no matter what. We do not celebrate Thanksgiving here in Australia. There is no such thing as Thanksgiving here in Australia. So if anyone asks me that, we don't. But I will be having a holiday on that day because there's no NBA games, which it works out being a Friday here. So I guess I am sort of celebrating Thanksgiving in that way, but that we know turkey, that we know family dinners, that we know none of that because it's just not something that we do over here. But it means that we've got a weird NBA schedule this week. And as you can see from that analysis up on the screen, if you are watching the video, week six is a weird one in terms of games distribution. On Monday, we've got 11 games. On Tuesday, we've got one game. That's one of the real weird parts of it. Just one game on Tuesday. Wednesday, we've got 14 games. Thursday, Thanksgiving, no games. Friday 10, Saturday 10, and Sunday 3. So when we look at that for streaming purposes, it looks shitful. So you've got two real streaming days, Tuesday and Sunday. You're not going to be able to get someone in on a Wednesday, that's guaranteed. Probably not on a Monday with 11 games, and a Friday, Saturday with 10 games apiece. You probably aren't going to be able to stream someone in on those days and add them to your active lineup. So you'd be looking to who plays on Tuesday. It's the Bulls and the Lakers. Who can you add there? Denzel Valentine, Justin Holiday, Chrissy Dunn, Jaren Grant, Punchbob Shiploke. Any of those blokes could be available for you to add for the Bulls on the Lakers side of things. Joshy Hart, do you look at adding him? Julius Randle, you'd add him anyway if he was around. Jordy Clarkson, if he was available. Anyone from that Tuesday. And then on Sunday, you've only got the three games. So you're looking to add people who play on that Sunday. So we're talking about the Suns, the Lakers, we've got the Warriors, we've got the Raptors, we've got the Wizards, we've got the Wolves, we've got the Nuggets, the Bulls, the Heat, and the... I think I'm looking at the completely wrong day. Yes, I am. Scratch all that for those teams that play on a Sunday. The Tuesday ones are correct. The Bulls and Lakers. I was looking at this week's Sunday, which, of course, is not the Sunday that we need to look at. So let's scratch that again and go back to this Sunday. So we've got the Grizzlies. We've got the Nets. We've got the Timberwolves. We've got the Suns. And we've got the Bulls and the Heat all play on that Sunday. So streaming one of those guys in from one of those teams. And maybe you could consider the Bulls a pseudo back-to-back. You add them on Tuesday, and then you keep that guy for Sunday. But with so few opportunities to stream guys in, you're not going to go through and use all of your weekly additions anyway. So trying to get a two-for-one from Tuesday through to Sunday is not the best way of approaching it. So it's all about just, hey, load up on your Tuesday. Check your Friday and Saturday schedules to see how many players you've got on your team. Can you add anyone? Can you look to add some players? And if you've got room on both Friday and Saturday, there are some teams with back-to-backs. There's quite a few, in fact. Portland, Orlando, the Knicks, the Hornets, the Celtics, the Thunder, the Pelicans, they all have back-to-backs on Friday, Saturday. The Hawks do also. The Raptors, and there's one more team, and it's the Indiana Pacers that also have got a back-to-back. Oh, and the Warriors. Yeah, and the Warriors have got a back-to-back on that Friday, Saturday. So you might be able to get games out of those guys. But again, with limited streaming opportunities, you're not going to be needing to really balance out your ads all that much. And of course, when we get to that Sunday, you're looking to target your categories. What categories do I need to win this week rather than who's my best overall player? Because I'm really anti-best overall player in general. But especially when you're talking about a Sunday ad, like you're looking to target a few categories. There might be two up for grabs. There might be three up for grabs. They're the ones you're really trying to look at on that Sunday to make those moves there. So it is a really weird week in terms of streaming. It's a shit streaming week. If you see you've got a game disadvantage 41 to 35 during the week or something, you're not going to be able to do much about it. You're just going to sit back and go, oh, you know what? If I get out of it 3-6, I'm probably going okay. You're not going to be able to do a huge amount to influence that result. You're going to hope for some big games and some poor games from their blokes, but you're going to hope for some big games from your guys, and you just might have to go, well, this is just going to be a shit week for me, and I can't really do much about it. It'll even out at some point, but there's really not a huge amount of maneuvering that you can do during this week to try and get things happening. Let's have a look in terms of weekly leagues, how it all looks. As I said, there are 11 teams. Well, I haven't said this yet. There are 11 teams playing four games this week: the Hawks, the Celtics, the Hornets, the Bulls, the Grizzlies, the Wolves, the Pelicans, the Knicks, the Thunder, the Magic, and the Blazers. The majority of teams are playing three games, and there's three teams that play two games, and that's the Pistons, the Rockets, and the Lakers. So on those Pistons and Rockets guys that have got, and Lakers guys that have only got two games this week, the only real player out of that group of guys is Jim Harden, who's an absolute lock for weekly leagues, and probably Chrissy Paul as well, although you might be a little concerned that maybe he only plays 25 minutes a game, and that's like 50 minutes over the course of the week. Not sure that's going to be quite enough. So guys like your Lonzo Balls, future MVP Kyle Kuzma, Clint Capella, maybe, but probably not, Trevor Ariza, Drummond, Reg Jackson, Toby Harris, Avery Bradley. Yeah, it's going to be really hard to start those guys in a weekly league with just two games, where I think Jim is probably your only absolute lock guy to put in across this Thanksgiving week with the two games on for these guys. We want to have a look at that strengths of schedules. We'll look at the three-game teams and who's got the best schedule there, because that's probably where most of your decisions are going to lie, whether it's going to be players on a three-game schedule, best schedule versus worst schedule, that sort of style. The Cavs, the Spurs, and the Kings have all got very nice schedules this week, as do the Clippers and the Raptors. We're on the flip side of things. The Sixers have the Jazz, the Blazers, and the Magic. That's bad. The Mavericks, the Bucks, and the Heat all have non-ideal schedules. So they're the teams that, if you're sort of on the fence and you're talking about a guy, you know, from the Kings, maybe it's Willie Cauley-Stein with three games, and you're matching him up with John Henson, the Muppet, from the Bucks. The Bucks have a significantly worse schedule than what the Kings do. So maybe you do take Cauley-Stein there over Henson just because of that schedule matchup where the Kings play against Denver. Great. The Lakers, fantastic. And the Clippers, probably not so good, but there's some opportunities there as well. So that's the way you want to have a look at that. The Blazers play four games this week, all on the road, which is always a weird thing when that happens. Then you've got a couple of teams that play all three of their games at home, the Kings and the Sixers, while the Clippers and the Raptors play all three of their games on the road. As I said, a real weird game, real weird week this week in terms of quality games because of Thanksgiving. So again, don't be surprised if you do lose this matchup due to games discrepancies and without having much of a chance of being able to overcome that. Got a lot to talk about in today's show. Again, we're going to be covering all of Sunday's action. We're going to preview a big Monday, all 11 games for DFS, give out our nightly awards, all that sort of stuff. So we might as well get stuck into that right now. And we'll go straight into that with the monstrous line of the night. And it is Steph Curry of the Golden State Warriors. Curry had 39 points with 11 rebounds and 7 assists. He hit 4 triples. He had 3 steals. And he was 14 of 24 from the field and 7 of 8 from the free throw line. He did foul out. And the Nets did come back extraordinarily in that second half with a big, big third quarter from the Nets. But Curry is your monstrous line of the night. He's stabilized himself as the number 3 ranked player this season. Number 2 over the last week. This was a game without Kevin Durant, and we've seen time and time again when Durant is out, we get more of 15-16 Steph Curry than 16-17 Steph Curry. It happened last year. It's happened here in this one. Durant may or may not be able to go for the Warriors' next game, which is against the Thunder, so you might get another big Steph game in that one, but he's been really fantastic. 25.5 points, 5 boards, 6.5 assists, 2 steals, 3.5 triples, only shooting 38% from 3, which I know is dumb to say only, but he shot over 40% pretty much his entire career. So that you can expect that to somewhat come up. And at 47% from the field, that could also rise as well. So he's actually got scope to get better than what he currently is. 94% from the line is pretty ridiculous and still has a true shooting of 65% this year. So he is your monstrous line of the night, and he is your number 3 overall ranked player for fantasy for this season. The waiver wire line of the night, I feel like this guy and Marco Bellinelli have won this award multiple times already this season. I know one of my listeners who keeps a track of those awards will be able to let me know. But Bojan Bogdanović is your waiver wire line of the night. Bojan had another strong game, 26-3-2 with 6 triples and a steal and 9 of 14 from the field. And he was 2 of 2 from the free throw line. Now, I know I talk about Bojan a lot and say, look, he can have these big games. You like him for tournaments in DFS because he can do this. But in terms of his overall value, he's pretty streaky. But you can have a look at what he's doing this year. He's the 95th ranked player. And you can go, that's useful, Josh. And I would say, yeah, I agree with you. That is useful. He's averaging 14 points with 2.3 triples. There's some use in both of those numbers. 3.3 rebounds, 1.5 assists. That's okay. 1.5 assists, 0.6 steals. But he's shooting 52% from the field and 84% from the line for a true shooting of 65%. That is a significant jump. He was at 45% from the field last year, 43% the year before that, and 45% the year before that. He is shooting 46% on threes when he was 37, 38, and 36 the past previous 3 seasons. Now, he could realistically remain a 40% three-point shooter. I don't think that's a stretch. He could realistically remain a 47%, 48% shooter from the field. But for him to stick at 52, 46, and 84 sounds like a crazy, crazy expectation for Bojan Bogdanović. And if those percentages drop, all three of them, then he loses his two strongest categories pretty much, which is points and threes. And his field goal percentage, which is currently a positive in terms of value, that will come down to being perhaps a negative. And then his value will probably tumble outside the top 160. So for now, sure, he's fine. He's putting up these numbers. He can be a little bit streaky. We've seen that before. But that is, out of his past 5 games, he scored at least 15 points in 4 consecutive games. And he shot at least 50% from the field in 4 of those 5 games. So, obviously, on a real hot streak in terms of shooting. But if we just go by common sense, go by what this guy's done in the past, then he's not, or go by just any wing who's not named LeBron, Kevin Durant, or Giannis, they're not going to be able to sustain 52% shooting from the field or 46% from three. No one, even Steph Curry's not a 46% from three guy. So Bojan is going to cool off in those areas. His points will drop, his threes will drop, his field goal percentage will drop, and you'd imagine a 60 to 70 spot drop in the rankings is not going to be a crazy expectation. So add him, but always be careful who you're dropping in these sort of cases when someone's value is so extremely tied to an unsustainable level of shooting, which is what I believe Bojan's is. The young gun of the night goes to Lonzo Ball of the Los Angeles Lakers. 11, 16, and 11 for the big baller. He hit a three, which is a rarity in itself. Two blocks, 5 of 13 from the field. Didn't attempt a free throw. Lonzo, for as shithouse as he has been this season in terms of shooting, with his 31, 23, and 46 split, which is just... That is ludicrous. That is... Bojan Bogdanovic's worst shooting percentage is higher than Lonzo Ball's best. 46% from the field for Lonzo, and Bojan was at 48% from... Oh, sorry, 46, so they're equal. 46 for three from Bojan, and 46 from the line for Ball. If you want to break it down, Ball's at 46.2 and Bojan's at 46.4. So Bojan's worst shooting percentage from three is better than Ball's free throw percentage. But Lonzo's still the 97th ranked player, just two spots behind Bogdanovic, because he is averaging 9 points. That's shithouse. 1-3, yeah. But 7 boards, 7 assists, 1.5 steals, 1 block per game. That is the moneymakers there for Lonzo Ball. They are the stats that you love. He is literally getting dropped by people. People are considering dropping him, and it is bananas to me. You should never have relied upon him for scoring. Yes, this is below what I expected, but you never wanted to rely upon him for scoring. And field goal percentage is always very, very iffy for rookies. Now, he shot 71% on two-pointers last year, and I couldn't have stressed this enough during the preseason that I thought there was absolutely no way he'd be able to be at that level or really maintain a really high efficiency from the field. Now, I didn't think he'd be this bad, but so I think he's got some room to grow from here. But it's the rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, the decent three-point contribution, which is keeping Lonzo as a top 100 guy, and he can still push forward to be a top 70, maybe a top 60 guy for the rest of the season. So if your team's set up for it, even if it's not, if he's on the waiver wire, I would just grab him and let's just work it out after that. Sit him on the bench, see what happens for a week or so. But those other numbers are really useful, and they're going to be useful to at least one team in your league. So I would add him if he is around. Though those counting stats can be very useful for the young big baller. Let's talk dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Yeah, Dion Waiters is decidedly not hot after throwing up 0 points. 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and 2 steals, going 0 of 10 from the field. He is just a player that just shits me to tears, Dion Waiters. I just cannot deal with him. But in saying that, his previous 5 games, he'd been in double digits in scoring and hit at least 2 triples in all those games. He'd had a 3-steal game. He'd had 2 5-assist games. But his field goal percentage is a real issue. Now, again, I've heard of people, I want to drop Dion Waiters. He's 110th ranked player this season, despite shooting under 40% from the field, averaging 15-3-3, 2 threes, and a steal. Those numbers are okay. He doesn't go to the line very often, but he's at 83% there so far, which is, you know, much higher than anything he's done in his career. His usage is up. He is not a very good fantasy player. I have said this time and time again, but he can score. He can get some nice out-of-position-ish assists as a shooting guard. The steal numbers are okay. He hits some threes. He should be owned in all 12-team leagues. I don't see why he wouldn't be owned. And if he is available, I would look to grab him. But unlike a guy like Lonzo, who might be on the wire, I wouldn't be, you know, moving, not heaven and earth, but I wouldn't be going out and going, oh my God, I have to get Dion onto my squad, because maybe he doesn't fit what you do. Maybe, and his upside is just not that high. Because you look at him and you go, okay, he's averaging 15-3-3. Where does he get better from here? Yeah, he's at 40% from the field, but what does he get to? 42? It's not like he's a career 52% shooter and he's shooting 40%. You go, you know what? Even if it's an off year, he'll probably get to 47. This is where you go, okay, well, he's shooting poorly, and this is sort of where he is. It's not like he's an 8-assist-per-game guy who's weirdly down at 3, and you go, well, he'll get to 6 or 7. He's down on his 4.4 assists per game from last year, but the two previous seasons, he was at 2 per game. So at 3.3, it's whatever. Look, that's just sort of where he is. So this is sort of the player that he is. He might sneak inside the top 100, but I don't think he's ever getting to the top 80 or top 70 or nowhere near the top 50. And I think it's not far off sort of where he is. I would expect some of that shooting to come back up, and that will increase his points per game category also. But he's not a guy to necessarily drop, but he's also not a high priority guy to go and add. If your team's really strong, Dion Waiters is not the guy that you need to necessarily break up your squad or drop a good player to go and add. He's not that sort of a guy to me. And because this is my show, I guess when I say to me, that's really all that matters when I'm giving my opinion. All right, let's go into these games now and talk about all six of them that did go down on Sunday. The first one of those was the Washington Wizards and the Toronto Raptors. There was no John Wall. He was out with that knee problem, so Timmy Frazier got the start. And he did sort of, I guess, exactly what you would have hoped he'd done. Only 6 points, but 8 rebounds and 8 assists. And if Johnny has to miss another game, then Tim will get some more playing time. Tomas Satoransky moves from a DMP guy into the backup role, and deeper leagues will pay some attention there. Otto Porter, 15 and 6 for Otto. The shooting was still pretty good, 50% from three. Did have a wrap on his wrist and some ice on his wrist. So that's something to pay some attention to, but he's fine. Well, Brattles had 27 and 4 with 5 triples, and Marcin Gortat with the near triple-double. 12, 12 and 7 for Gortat in 35 minutes. And Markieff Morris copped a whack in the nose. He said he was limited with his minutes, and he played just 27 here. So Gortat got some extra playing time. Also, weirdly in this one, Kelly Oubre down to 16 minutes. So we saw more Markieff at the 4, allowing Gortat to play more of those minutes at center. Now, when Morris is back playing 30, and if Oubre goes back to 25 or 26, it is going to be harder for Gortat to play anywhere near those minutes. You've heard me say it plenty of times. You still hold him for now, but it is a situation that could tail off pretty quickly. As for Morris, I don't think he's a very high upside guy. He'll be better than this. He was 1 of 10 from the field, still had the triple one, had 4 boards, and his minutes will be, you know, at that 28 to 29 zone, not necessarily at 30 to 31, which is where he was last season. Wouldn't be expecting him to necessarily get to that level of where he was last year. The Toronto Raptors, a big win here. Yes, the Wizards were playing without John Wall, but it's still big. A huge game from DeMar DeRozan. 33, 8, and 6. The assists for him have been fantastic this year. 2 triples, 2 steals, and a blocks, and super efficiency. Really, really good. But I think the big story coming out of this one for the Raptors is the play of Pascal Siakam. He played 30 minutes. 31 minutes, in fact. More than Serge Ibaka, who played 26. More than Jonas Valanciunas, who played 17. More than Jakob Poeltl. More than Bebe Nogueira. He's super active. Dwayne Casey's got nothing but positive things to say about Siakam. He had a steal, he had 2 blocks, he had 9 rebounds. So it wouldn't be crazy to think that Siakam can find himself in a significant role as we move forward. He closed the game alongside Serge Ibaka as the power forward as Ibaka moved to center, and he provided tons of athleticism, speed, energy, all that sort of stuff, which Casey really, really enjoyed. I don't think he's a 12-team league ad, but he's a 16-teamer, almost no doubt, and he probably is a must-own 14-team league guy at the moment, especially while Norman Powell remains out. But we've seen the last two games Valanciunas play under 20 minutes a night, and I would say that's closer to what we should expect than 25 minutes a night. Yeah, 22 is probably the realistic expectation for Jonas, but if the way Siakam's playing now is going to continue, then you're going to see more of these sub-20-minute nights from Valanciunas, which is going to make him a tough guy to own in 12-team leagues. Bebe had 8 points in 14 minutes. Poeltl had 5 and 4 in 10 minutes. And with Siakam playing this well, they're not going to see that 18 to 20 minutes either. Kyle Lowry had 10, 5 and 6. Clearly not his best night. While Freddie Van Vliet saw 24 minutes and had 10, 3 and 5. While DeLon Wright is out, Van Vliet does have deep league appeal. Hit some threes, can score, can get some assists as well. OG Anunoby made a start, 20 minutes, 5 and 2. Love him for Dynasty Leagues. Not really sure that even if he did start and play 30 minutes a night this season, I'm not sure that he would be a 12-team league guy in that situation as a rookie. While CJ Miles hit another 3 triples, but did literally nothing else. No boards, no assists, no steals, no blocks, and was 4 of 12 from the field. A great 3-point streamer. That's probably about where it is for CJ. The next game was the Indiana Pacers and the Miami Heat. Everyone's real quick to write off Miles Turner. Probably shouldn't be that quick to do it. 25 and 7, 4 assists, a steal, 4 blocks, 2 triples, 79% from the field. He's going to be good. I said this a few times on the show that he's been dealing with the after effects from a concussion, and he's going to be okay. You should have bought low. Hopefully you did. Thaddeus Young, 12 and 6 with 3 steals. Not a huge amount of minutes for Thad. Same with Domantas Sabonis, who had 8 and 10 in 19 minutes. I think the 19 minutes should worry you a little bit there if you're a Sabonis owner. You still do want to hold him. and especially on a night where TJ Leaf plays just 3 minutes, as the Pacers did tend to go small. We saw, yeah, more Collison, Corey Joseph, Lance Stevenson, minutes for those guys, everyone pushing up a position, with Young and Sabonis combining for only 44 minutes. And TJ Leaf with the extra three there, that's 48 minutes basically between those three. And then we're talking 14 minutes of the game where it was Turner and no other big men at all on the court, unless you count the 3 minutes that Alex Poitras played. Corey Joseph was all right, 11-3-5, more a 14-team league guy, while Daz Collison had 12-2-10, a nice, solid, strong night for him, as was Victor Oladipo, who just missed the Richie Beno. He had 15-4-5 with two steals and two blocks and just had the 1-3. I'm not going to give him a cheap soundbite either. On to the Miami Heat, the Duke, Wayne Ellington, another massive night from the Duke, 25 minutes for him, 21 points, all of those coming from three. So for those of you without a calculator on hand, that is seven triples. He's one of the elite three-point streaming options. He was last year. If you need threes on a Sunday and the Heat are playing, the Duke is the guy that you want to go and add, because he could have zero, or he could have five or six or seven pretty comfortably. Doesn't do much else, but he's played some decent minutes recently, yeah, pushing Tyler Johnson's minutes down, pushing Kelly Olynyk's minutes down as the Duke comes in and plays these 20 minutes. Hassan Whiteside only saw 22 minutes of action. This was a blowout, by the way. So some of those minutes are due to that. 15-8 with a steal and a block for Hassan, still good. Well, Joshy Richardson, 30 minutes for Josh, 15-1-2, two steals and a three on 54% shooting. This is what his owners would have been waiting for. A lot of shot attempts. He took the most on the team. 54% conversion, two steals, two assists. This is why I maintain faith in Richardson. I know it's been a tough battle trying to hold on to him, and it hasn't been good stuff so far from Joshy, but he is still the 120th ranked player this season. Despite all of the hand-wringing and, oh, what did I do picking this guy? Oh my God. Despite all of that, he's 120th ranked player. He's getting 1.4 steals, 0.8 blocks, 1.5 threes, 2.5 assists. These are not good numbers overall. And 9 points is not good, but those defensive stats are good. He's shooting 38%. That will go up. He's shooting 28% from three. That will also go up. So look at this from the lens of a 13-3-3 with 1.5 and a block and two triples a game. And you go, that's pretty bloody good. And that's pushing into that top 90 sort of consideration. So I'm still about owning Josh Richardson. I'm not off at all. I understand the urge to drop him. And in some cases, depending on who's available, like if Rocket Rodney Hood's around, I would can say, yeah, you know what? Maybe you want to move Richardson for Hood. Same with Don Mitchell. But in a lot of cases, it's like, oh, should I drop him for Punch Bob? No. Should I drop him for Jaren Grant? Like, no, what are you talking about? Like, we are only 5 weeks in. I know it's been literally people, this is my worst draft pick, and he's 120th ranked player. So he's still a valuable player in standard leagues. And yes, he's, you probably grabbed him in round 8 or round 9 or something. That's shit return on investment. But for him to be shit and still be worth and still be not the worst player on your team, it gives me some hope for some upside. Because I'll tell you one thing, the minutes aren't going anywhere for Josh Richardson. They are sticking, because he is really, really important to what they do. Goran Dragic was not a good night for him, 8-5-4, while Justice Winslow had 6-5-3, and Jimmy Johnson 10-4-6, but not a great night to write home about for the Miami Heat in general. Golden State Warriors and the Brooklyn Nets, no Kevin Durant, as I mentioned earlier. They got out to a big lead, 28 points, and it was whittled down to, I think, 5 at one point. Just a really, really fun game and fun end of the game. We'll talk Warriors first. Klay had his third career double-double, 23-10 with two steals. A nice night from him, while Draymond added the peripherals, 7 boards, 8 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, but he was just 1 of 8 for 5 points, while Omri Caspi started in place of Kevin Durant and had 12-8. He blocked 2 shots, was really active early, but played just 23 minutes, as Andre Iguodala saw 32 minutes of playing time. Pat McCaw got back into the rotation playing 6 minutes, and Uncle P played 16 minutes. So if Durant is out one more game against the Thunder, Caspi could be worth a look, but I would imagine when he has to match up against Carmelo Anthony or Paul George, it's going to be harder to even give 23 minutes to Caspi in that situation. And you might get 33 minutes out of Iguodala. You might get a little bit more Pat McCaw. I wouldn't be banking on Caspi as a 12-team league guy, especially on Wednesday when there are 14 games on. Dave West continues to do what he does, a really good block streamer despite the limited minutes, gets blocks pretty much every time that he's out there. over the Brooklyn Nets side. The Blue Swimmer was unbelievable in the end of this game, just hitting crazy, crazy threes. He had 25 points, which included six triples, and had seven boards. So when the Blue Swimmer gives you something else apart from points and threes, that is Alan Crabb, it's a bonus, but not much else. Two assists, zero steals, zero blocks, 47% from the field, and 55% from three is obviously a pretty big number there from Crabb. He's getting more minutes with the D'Angelo Russell injury, but you can talk about, you know, value of Josh Richardson. Crabb's 117th ranked player, averaging 12 points. But because he averages 12 points and not 9 points, his numbers do look better, but he just doesn't do enough in those other areas. He's shooting just 41%. Now, I think he should be owned, but I don't consider him a must-own guy, but he should be owned in all 12-team leagues, as should Spencer Dinwiddie. In fact, I'd rather have Dinwiddie over the Blue Swimmer. 21-2-8 for him, two triples, a steal, and a block. And it's amazing the Bulls could have had Spencer Dinwiddie this whole time, but they let him go. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, 16-12-5. 31 minutes. His minutes are set. They're solid. He's going to play over 30 a night this year, and he's looked really good. And this is the Caris LeVert that I talk about. This is the one that I go, this guy can be a very good NBA player, and he can be a very good fantasy player. Only 22 minutes, which is a drawback, but 13-4-4 with two threes, two steals, and 46% shooting. Those are numbers that if it was in 29 minutes, you'd be going, shit, this is a 15-5-5 with two steals and three threes, huh? That's a top 50 type of player. He's not going to be that this season because he's currently getting these 22, 23-minute roles, and he played almost exclusively as a backup point guard in this one. Well, not almost exclusively, but played all of the minutes behind Spencer Dinwiddie. I don't think we really need to see 7 minutes from Sean Kilpatrick ever again. So, you know, some of those minutes can be going to Caris LeVert also. So he's a name to watch. He's not a 12-team league guy at the moment just because of the minutes. But again, the start of the season, when it's fueled by such ridiculously low shooting, it's going to come up. And the other numbers will come, the assists, the steals, the rebounds. And this is why I really do like LeVert, is this sort of performance. Damari Carroll was good as well, 15-11 with three triples. And we got some flashes from Jarrett Allen down the stretch. Now, Trevor Booker lasted only 9 minutes with an ankle injury that he had flared up at the start of this game. He didn't play in the second half at all, but we saw no Tim Mozgov whatsoever. We saw 12 minutes of Jarrett Allen, who had 6-3 with a block. He's not a 12-team league guy yet. He's a guy that we can pay some attention to, and I think will become, by the time we get to March, I think he will become a 12-team league guy, playing 23, 24 minutes a night. But for now, we've got Tyler Zeller, Quincy Acey, Trevor Booker, those guys who are going to take some of those minutes off Allen. But at this point, Mozgov appears out of the rotation for the foreseeable future. Let's move on to the next one. It's the Detroit Pistons and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Andre Drummond, it looked a little bit scary at one point, bumped his arm. He went down in significant pain. Turns out it was just his funny bone. So, no need to concern yourself there if you're an Andre Drummond owner. I think that Andre Drummond should be the most improved player at this point in the season. Maybe there's an obvious name that I'm missing, but it's not just the fact that he's improved his free throws. He went 4 of 5 here. It's the fact that he's improved his defensive effort. It's the fact that his passing is now a legitimate weapon. His offensive game has changed. There's no more of these bullshit post-ups. It's dunks, it's alley-oops, it's pick and rolls. That's it. He had 20-16, 4 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. 53-80, and he is absolutely crushing it this season. And if you've took the punt on Drummond, and he was a guy that I thought was due for a bounce back season after that septum surgery to free up some oxygen into your lungs, and it turns out you need oxygen to run. Now, he's been a real steal for people, and yeah, putting up some good numbers. Avery Bradley, 18 points with 3 steals. Reggie Jackson took this game over and this is what I said as well on the last time. Well, maybe I didn't. I don't even know if it was the last time I podcast, if I was writing notes on Basketball Monster. I don't remember. But it was a game where Ish Smith played down the stretch over Reggie, and you know, people start to get worried. I go, this is what happens. If there's a game where he's just not feeling it, occasionally Smith will just run it out. But the next game, he'll go back and he'll put up a big one. 16-2-8 for Reggie in 29 minutes. He was unbelievable in the final 3 or 4 minutes. Really got the Pistons back in a comeback victory over the line. He was awesome, and he's had a great season too. Stan Johnson had played under 30 minutes in his 2 games back from his injury, but he played 38 here and had 10-4-2 with a pair of steals. Not a 12-team league player yet, but those steal numbers are intriguing, and his big minutes took playing time almost all of it away from Langston Galloway, but it also reduced Luke Kennard down to just 10 minutes, and he'd been playing 15 to 16 minutes a night before this one. Eric Morland in the rotation as the backup center, ahead of Boban Marjanovic. The tackle box, John Lua, with his ankle is out as well, and he's going to be having an MRI, so I'd imagine a few more games on the sideline for the tackle box. So you 30-team leaguers, Eric Morland's the guy to go and add. He only had 3 boards, but 15-minute regular spot in the rotation every night is important for those deeper leagues. Onto the Wolves, Jim Butler. He's back. 26, 10 and 4, 5 steals, 2 triples, 67% from the field, got to the line 6 times, missed a key free throw late though in this one. But this is the Jim Butler that we knew in Chicago, and he's putting up those numbers again. He is taking some shots away from Karl Towns, because apparently you can never take the shots away from Andrew Wiggins, who had 24 points on 18 shots himself. As for Wiggins though, look, I can hang shit on him as I do it quite a bit, but yeah, really good stuff defensively. 2 steals and 3 blocks is not something that you see very often from Wiggo, and if he can do those sort of things on a semi-regular basis, then he does become a top 40 player, a top 50 player. Townsie had 16 and 9 with 2 triples, and Butler's usage has decreased Towns' usage pretty significantly over these last few games. The whole Timberwolves team's got a shit playoff schedule for a lot of leagues, so if you can trade Towns for Davis, for Cousins, for Jokic maybe, I'd seriously consider it. Get those extra 2 playoff games if you're looking good. The downturn in usage is a little bit of a concern. I would consider that. Jamal Crawford left halfway through the game with a migraine. That didn't mean that Tibbs played any of his other bench guys more. It just meant we'll just play everyone else bigger minutes. 42 to Butler, 42 to Wiggo, 38 to Townsie. Jeff Teague played 40 minutes and had just 3 points and 9 assists, while no one on the bench, aside from Nemanja Bjelica, who played 15 minutes, no one played over 10 minutes on that bench, despite Crawford being out and seeing just 7 minutes of action. We didn't get to see any Marcus George Hunt. We didn't get to see any Aaron Brooks. We didn't get to see Shabazz Muhammad play 12 minutes or Tyus Jones play 12, because Tibbs had to run those guys into the ground, and shockingly enough, they faded and choked in the fourth quarter. Oh well, that's just what happens, I guess. The Chicago Bulls and the Phoenix Suns is the next game we're going to take a look at. The Bulls get the victory by losing 105 to 113. Lauri Markkanen was fantastic. 34 minutes for Markkanen, 26 and 13 with 4 triples. No defensive numbers, but supreme efficiency, shooting 56% from the field. And I get this question a lot. I got it a lot when PunchBob Shiploke was coming back. Oh, Markkanen, Manziel, I need to sell high because Portis is going to come back and take his minutes. No. No, Markkanen is locked in as a starting power forward. Oh, Nikola Mirotic is going to be back soon, man. We're going to sell high on Markkanen because he's going to lose his minutes. No, I just don't see it happening. This is the scenario. Look, and I could be wrong. This is the scenario I see happening. Mirotic comes back and Portis is taken out of the rotation. Or Mirotic comes back and for some reason, because the entire organization hates him because he got his face caved in, they hate him now. Logic, this is the Bulls though, that he just doesn't play. They're the two scenarios I see happening. I don't see him coming back and just going, oh, sorry, Nick, you're back as the starter. Every vibe I'm getting from this team is that they are just not interested in him whatsoever. Feels like all of the team, the organization, the teammates are all on Bobby Portis's side. And Mirotic isn't going to come back in here. And if he's going to take anyone's minutes, it's going to be Portis's. It might be Felizio's. It is not going to be Markkanen's. Markkanen is going to play 30 a night. He's going to do what he does. And I don't think there's any necessity to panic. Chris Dunn should be the starting point guard. He's going to have some shit nights, no doubt, but 17, 6, and 6 with 2 steals. These are the sort of numbers that we thought that maybe was a possibility heading into the preseason. With no one around on this team, he was just going to bludgeon himself into some stats, get those assists, get some steals, block some shots as a point guard. You don't expect 50% shooting each night, which he did in this one, but he is a must-own player, and he must be owned. If he is on your waiver wire, you do need to grab him. Unless your team is just chocked full, just completely stacked, then maybe you don't add him. But you got to look at him. Punch Bob only played 20 minutes, 12 points with 3 rebounds and a block, and this is just going perfectly to script. Comes out, breakout, big performance. Everyone really, really going the old salad toss on Punch Bob. And yeah, my comment was, oh, add him if you have to, but there's no way it's going to persist. We've seen it before. We've seen this story before. He's not good enough. Turns out he's not good enough. And turns out he wasn't going to be able to keep up a usage of 30% and a true shooting of 61% or whatever sort of bullshit that he was doing. Denzel the Hammer Valentine, 37 minutes, 9 points with 3 triples, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. Now, when Zach LaVine returns, the Hammer is going to lose some playing time, but I think that he should stick as a starter. You know, I've been a decent fan of Valentine, especially from a fantasy point of view. Rebounding ability, hit 3-pointers, get assists, can get some steals as well, and that can all translate into fantasy goodness. And if you're going to play 37 a night, which again will come down, I'm really, really interested. So I think that the Hammer, shout out to my brother for the Hammer nickname as well. I don't want him to think that he's not getting the credit for it. I did retweet it yesterday with his suggestion. The Hammer is Denzel Valentine now, so that's what we're going with. He's worth an ad. Justin Holliday played 37 as well, 13, 2, and 3 with 2 steals and 3 triples. Now, David Nwaba is due back soon, probably not for Tuesday, but later in the week he'll be back. But I don't think that's going to impact Denzel very much. It's going to take Quincy Pondexter entirely out of the rotation and probably Antonio Blakeney, who played 19 minutes. Pal Zipser is already gone out of the rotation, and Nwaba will come back and take Pondexter and Blakeney's minutes. Now, Zach LaVine is likely to be cleared for contact this week. That doesn't mean that he's going to be ready to play. His timetable is still the same, mid to late December, before he's back on the court. And then we're looking at 2, 3, 4 weeks of limited minutes. There'll be back-to-backs that he sits out pretty much the whole year. So don't think that he's coming in playing 37 minutes a night on the 10th of December. You might see him just before Christmas playing 20 minutes a night for 2 weeks. And all that's fine. And adding him is totally fine. Without an IR, we're talking a month away. It's totally fine. Just keep your expectations in check. And when you get to February, you might get 30 minutes a night out of him. Jaren Grant was shit. 2, 2, and 2 in 21 minutes. He is a droppable player in 12s and probably 14 team leagues as well. On to the Suns. Tony Warren Jr., 27 and 7, a steal and 2 blocks, through the roof efficiency. This is just what he does. He shoots, he scores, and he does it at a high efficiency. He was awesome to end last season. They mistakenly decided limiting him and splitting the minutes with Josh Jackson, which was bullshit. But now they've realized, you know what, TJ just needs to run things out there, and he is. And he's clearly a must-own guy. Devin Booker, 15, 1, and 6 with 2 steals. A nice night from him. There was no Tyson Chandler, no Jared Dudley. So Greg Monroe made another start. 21 minutes for Monroe. So he's played like 28 minutes, 18 minutes, and 21 minutes, meaning we have absolutely no idea what Triano is going to do. And then we're going to add Dudley and Chandler back into the mix, and we'll have even less of an idea what's going to happen with these guys' minutes. Monroe, 10, 6, and 4. And this is what I mentioned. After that first big game, add him, see how it goes. But don't be surprised if this doesn't continue to happen, or if the fact that he goes back to third string when Chandler's around in that Greg Popovich move of don't mess up your backup second unit and bring your third stringer in to start when the starter's out, which is what it's looking like at the moment. But 10, 6, and 4 is not bad from Greg. As for Alex Len, 10, 8, and 2 with a block in 26 minutes, but Chandler's going to come in. Triano been playing him 27 minutes a night, so someone's going to miss out here. And probably both these guys are going to see their minutes, if not cut completely, reduced. So it is a significant situation to watch, and there is no real scenario that either of these guys, or any of these guys, Len, Chandler, or Monroe, comes out as big winners. Mike James off the bench, 26 minutes, while Tyler Ulis played only 20. Just working out this point guard rotation is ridiculous. You just got no idea what's going to happen on a nightly basis, and that's why neither of those guys is a must-own player in 12-team leagues. Well, Joshy Jackson had 7, 7, and 4, which looks nice, but his minutes just aren't going to be high enough. Speaking of shit, Marquese Chris had 8, 6, and 3 in 21 minutes. I just don't think he's ever going to get it. I would be okay in a 10-team league. I wouldn't be holding on to him, and in a 12, I think you can feel pretty comfortable about moving on for him, especially when Jared Dudley returns and he inexplicably comes in and plays 20 minutes. The Denver Nuggets and the Los Angeles Lakers. Old Baby Neck is playing much better lately. Wilson Chandler, 27 minutes here, 17 and 4 with 3 triples, a steal, and a block. But this was a blowout. The rotations are stuffed. It is hard to get a big grasp on things. Now, Chandler would be okay to add. I don't see any upside in him, but he's providing enough in terms of value that you can look at him. Now, I say this was stuffed up because Nikola Jokic was ejected in what looked like a ridiculous decision. It didn't appear like he deserved 2 techs for whatever he did, unless he just ran at the ref with a polite look on his face and told the ref to gargle his balls. I don't know what he said, but he was tossed. Mike Malone came on the court. Sure, Malone, you're out of here. You're an idiot. Jokic just sort of went like, what's going on? That was the face he gave, and he was tossed. It was a weird situation. So he played 11 minutes. And then Paul Millsap wasn't able to return after suffering a wrist injury that the Nuggets have been looking at in terms of x-rays. Now, I'm just going to check as we record this live if we have any results on that x-ray. And at this point, we don't. We don't have any news on the x-ray just yet. So there, that's a situation. So that changed the rotations around for this team. In the second half, we had Fart and Will Barton start in place of Millsap, pushing old Baby Neck up to the four, and Mason Plumlee started in place of Jokic. Fareed only saw 9 minutes for the entire game. Plumlee played 30, but you had the biggest winner being Juancho Hernangómez, who had 19 minutes of action, 7 and 4, while Trey Lyles also saw 16 minutes. So anyone who's scampering to go and add Ken Fareed, you might want to temper it a bit, because it was Juancho and it was Lyles who were the biggest beneficiaries of Millsap's absence in this game. Now, it could be completely different in the next game, and they could just decide to start Fareed next to Jokic, but I think if they did, it'd be a 17 to 20 minute situation, and then you'd have some more Wancho, some more Lyles, some more Barton, and some more Baby Nick as well, getting those minutes without there being a clear-cut winner. Gaz Harris had 20 points with 4 triples.
Nice, Gary!
While the Blue Arrow had 10 and 4 with 2 steals and a block on a horrendous 18% shooting, but a good 6 of 6 from the line. Not the best night from Jamal Murray, but still not bad. On to the Lakers. Brook Lopez only played 22 minutes, which is a worry, but 21, 3 and 4 is fantastic. 2 blocks is also fantastic. While Julius Randle owners will be really salivating over this. 32 minutes for Randle, 24, 7 and 5. As usual, a lack of defensive numbers from Randle, but high efficiency and big minutes. The problem is that getting big minutes from him is just not a reliable thing. With the future MVP only seeing 26 minutes of action, Kyle Kuzma, Randle was able to seize on that. Kuzma still had 17, 3, and 3, and still has to be owned. And Randle, you go and add him if he is available, but this seems like a little bit of an outlier. Jordy Clarkson, the usage still through the roof, 30%, 18 points on 12 shots in 24 minutes, but the minutes is what is going to limit him at some point when the usage and when, more importantly, the efficiency does drop off, which it will, no doubt. And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had 15, 5, and 3 with 4 steals, a block, and 3 triples. A good night for KCP, but should be owned, but reliability is not a usual thing for Kentavious. That is all of the action from Sunday's games. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back, and we're going to preview all 11 games for DFS for Monday. There's a lot to get to. So this is a song by Semeron called Honnelly, and then I'll be back to talk DFS for Monday. Let's have a look at DFS action now, starting off by recapping the Sunday perfect lineups on FanDuel. Steph Curry 64.7 and Lonzo Ball 50.7. DeMar DeRozan 58.6, while Kentavious Caldwell-Pope 39.5. Bojan Bogdanovic 34.6 and Jim Butler 54. Larry Markkanen 41.6 and Julius Randle 37.9 and Marcin Gortat 39.9 for a total of 421.5, and that costs $59,400. On DraftKings for the main slate, which is just 4 games, Steph had 69.25, the Blue Swimmer had 38.25, TJ Warren 43.25, Markkanen had 47.25, Randle 39.75, Jim Butler 54.5, Omri Caspi 27.5 and Lonzo Ball 55.5 for a total of 375.25, and that cost $49,700. All right, we're going to talk DFS. There are 11 games for us to break down, so no mucking around. Let's get into it. The Jazz and the Sixers is the first game up on the slate. The Sixers are favored by 7, and the total is 212 points. Jared Bayless is looking to return from his wrist injury in this game. He is listed as probable. That has an impact on what Dario Saric will do in terms of his playing time, so that's something to pay attention to. Whereas for the Jazz, Thabo Sefolosha is dealing with a knee issue. Now, I think if Thabo plays, I think it will still be Jonas Jerebko starting, matching up with Saric and Simmons as those bigger bodies, which is what the Jazz have done pretty much all games since Gobert has been out, except for the one against the Nets when Thabo matched up against Hollis Jefferson. So there will be a limit on what Sefolosha can do here. At point guard, we've got TJ McConnell at 4,700. Well, with Bayless back, I'm just not interested in him whatsoever, nor am I interested in Bayless. While Ravishing Rick Rubio is at 6,300. It looks cheap for Rav. I would only be looking at him as a GPP sort of a player. at shooting guard. Rocket Rodney Hood at 5,800, just killing it at the moment. I'm all in on Rocket at that price. Well, JJ Redick at 53. The consistency is not quite there for JJ, and that price makes him a little bit hard to rely upon, so not a strong play. Well, Don Mitchell at 6,600. We love what Don can do, but I would only look at that as a tournament. Hope he goes off for 50. I don't feel strongly about his floor at that sort of a price. One guy you can have a look at who's getting some decent minutes lately is Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot. Now, with the return of Bayless, it might impact him, but we know that Justin Anderson's out, and he's playing over 20 minutes a night at the moment, Luwawu-Cabarrot. He's just $100 over minimum, and he had 17 points in the last one. It would be a real deep cut. It would be a tournament-only one, but it's a trend to watch. At small forward, Bob Covers at 6,800. He is just racking up 35s basically every night, and that's fine. It gives him a decent floor for cash. It gives him high upside for tournaments. I like him. Well, Jingle and Joe at 5,400. I just don't really see the floor or the ceiling enough to really crack in there. Tarbo at 43, not interested. I just don't think he'll play enough minutes in this matchup. At power forward, Jonas Jerebko is at 3,300. I think that's worth looking at. He had 24 in the last game at 25 minutes against the Nets. I think that he should be getting 16 to 17 points here. It's a good matchup for him. I like Jerebko at 33. And I like Derek Favors also, who's at 6,800, dropped 48 against the Nets. Not quite the same going up against Embiid. But we've seen numerous centers, Clint Capela, Andre Drummond, have some decent games against Embiid this season. And Favors could be one of those. A little bit fast, a little bit smaller, can do some stuff offensively against the big man. As for Šarić, 5,400 for Dario. He had 38 in the last game, which was really, really impressive. But of course, with Bayless back, he might start, but instead of playing 30 minutes, maybe he plays 22 minutes. So that takes away a lot of his value at that $5,400 price point. Benny Simmons is at 10,300. That's high for Ben, but he's getting 50 almost every night, and I think he should be looking at another 50 here, which is pretty good cash play. At center, it is Joel the Process Embiid, 10,600 for Joel. Probably a little bit high for cash. I think his floor is not quite high enough at that sort of a salary. I'd much rather take Simmons in cash than Embiid. But if I'm talking about tournament upside GPP, then we saw it 2 games ago. Embiid dropped 94 points. And I don't think Simmons is getting to that level. So he is a really, really good tournament play if you're looking for that, if one of those things floats your boat. Epe Udo, 3,300. 21 points in the last game, which is good amount of value at that salary. I just don't really feel a huge upside from Epe in this matchup. Let's have a look over on DraftKings at how I think things will shake out here in terms of who we look at. Tournaments, it's Redick at 48 and some cash plays. It's Embiid at 9,900, much better price. Simmons at 92, which I love. Bob Covers at 61 and Rocket Rodney Hood at 5,600 does have some value over on DraftKings. All right, let's go on to the next game now. It is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Detroit Pistons. The Cavs are favored by 2.5 points, and the total is 215.5. The tackle box, unlikely to play, undergoing an MRI for his ankle, so I don't think we'll see Johnny Lua, and Eric Morland will move into that. We know that Derrick Rose is out for the Cavs, but that's not going to have a massive impact. At point guard, you've got Reggie Jackson. We've seen guards go off against the Cavs time after time again. 6,200 for Jackson. What's his upside here? 40 points. I think that makes him a good tournament option. Where Ish Smith at 4,000. Maybe you'd throw Ish Smith in there. I probably wouldn't personally. And Jose Calderon, who's going to get the start for the Cavs, he's at $3,000. If he didn't play if he didn't play 10 minutes, I wouldn't be shocked. So I don't think he's really a good option. At shooting guard, Kyle Korver is killing it at the moment. He's at 3,800. Great tournament upside there for him. While the Birdcage, Avery Bradley at 6,000. Much like Reggie Jackson, guards going up into the Cavs, big nights usually come. So I'm in on Bradley having a 30, 35, 36, maybe 40 point upside in this one. Dwayne Wade would have been great if he was at 5,000 still, but he's not. FanDuel's bumped him to 6,200, and that takes away some of the upside for Wado. He's put together some good numbers, though, averaging 37 across the last three. I just don't feel 100% confident in it. And 4,300 for the plumber, J.R. Smith. Yeah, that's probably not going to do much for anyone. At small forward, Stan Johnson's at 4,100. Doesn't need much to get value, but I don't feel supremely confident in that. We know him and LeBron do have some issues with each other, so we'll see how that goes. And that makes me go to LeBron. At 11,600, this should be a 50, a 55-ish sort of night from LeBron, so I'm in. At power forward, Jay Crowder at 3,900. Couldn't have been shitter this season, but I like the upside as a GPP guy, but I am starting to fade away from that. While Toby Harris, maybe you throw him into a wing player that can go off, because he is a player that could do that. 6,700, but it feels like it's just a little bit too high. Centres, Channing Frye at 3,500, could easily get 20 points, but it's strictly a tournament-only situation. I love Drummond at 9,100 here, while Kevin Love at 7,500. I think he's more of a tournament guy. He can be a little bit up and down, but 7,500 is a fairly intriguing price for Love. Over on DraftKings, a lot of cash guys that I like here, and they can also be used in tournaments. I like Korver. I like Wade at 5,100. Korver's at 36. Bradley's at 6,000. Jackson's at 62. And Toby Harris is also 62. Drummond's at 88. And LeBron's at 11,300. All of those guys have cash and tournament usability. Over for DraftKings. The next game is the Indiana Pacers and the Orlando Magic. The Magic are favored by 4, and the total is 221 points in this one. Let's take a look at the point guards. Lord Alfred Payton, $6,800. Some point guards have had big games against the Pacers this season. Payton's been a little bit sluggish, but a triple-double can always come from him, so I like him as a GPP type of a guy. Whereas Corey Joseph has been a solid cash guy, about 23, 24 points a night, and at 4,200, you can't really ask for too much more than that. As for Daz Collison, 5,700 just seems too high for me to really like that. Terry Ross at 4,400. Upside maybe, but I don't really feel anything exciting there. Well, Vic Oladipo, if you want to go revenge games, maybe you can count this one. I don't know. 7,900 for Oladipo. I don't mind it. I think it's a 40-point sort of outing we're looking at for Oladipo, so I think it's a decent guy to take a look at. At small forward, Bojan Bogdanovic is at 4,200. Now, normally I would say that he's a tournament-only sort of a guy, but he's been decently consistent with what he's been able to do. So at 4,200 for cash, I don't think it's a bad move to use Bogdanovic. John Simmons at 4,700, not interested, while Evan Fournier at 64 and Lance Stephenson at 38, neither of those guys are working for me. Domantas Sabonis, no. As Gordon, 7,500, has really struggled to get near that. In fact, only once in his last six games has he reached value at that sort of a price, and the salary's gone up. Tournament, and that's really about it, but nothing too good there. Thaddeus Young at 6,000, I'm not really interested in that one either. At center, Nick Vucevic, 7,600, does like playing the Pacers, does like playing Miles Turner, has been a little bit down lately, but I do like this matchup for him, and I like getting back onto Vuce. Whereas at Turner at 7,500, monster today, obviously had the 52 points, but had struggled prior to that. Decent matchup against Vuce as well, but I'd probably lean more towards him being a tournament guy. And if you want a cheap center for cash, Mo Spates at 3,500 with John Isaac ruled out. He feels like almost a 17-point lock most of the time, so he can have some value in that sort of a setting. Over on DraftKings tournaments, I think we've got Bogdanovic at 4,300, a bit more expensive on DraftKings, Alfred Payton and Nick Vucevic. And for cash, I like Spates, I like Miles Turner, and I like Oladipo. Bogdanovic is 43 on DraftKings, Payton is at 61, and Vuce is at 71, whereas Oladipo is at 76, Turner's at 68, and Mo Spates is at 3,100. All right, the next game is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets are favored by 2, and the total is 214. Jeremy Lamb is probable with hamstring tightness. Marvin Williams is probable with left quad soreness, while Jamal Crawford left today's game with a migraine, so he is questionable for Monday's action. We'll see how that actually goes down. At point guard, Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
Wasn't the strongest game from Teague today. He is at $7,000, but he did play 40 minutes. So I think that there is some level of upside you could consider there for Teague as a tournament guy, whereas Kemba Walker just killing it. $8,300 is his price now, which is pretty high up there. I feel like he's almost guaranteed for 40 points most times he's out on the court. Michael Carter-Williams has been pushed back into the starting, also the backup point guard role, replacing Malik Monk, but there's nothing for you to see there. At shooting guard, Jeremy Lamb, 4,900. He's played well, even with Nick Batum back, but I'm not sure he can maintain a 25-point per night production. If he was going to do it, though, this is one of those games where he can do it, so he's worth a cash look, but really don't feel great about it. Wigo at 6,200, I'm in on him at that price, while Nick Batum at 7,200 is just... That's not just too high, it is way too high. At small forward, Kid Gilchrist at 49, I don't care for that. While Jim Butler at 83... Well, he put up some good numbers. He's done well against Charlotte in the past. I think that's a really good tournament guy, 50-point upside type of player for Jim Butler. Power forwards, Marv Williams at 4,400 has been okay, but there's just nothing exciting about rostering Marv. While Taj Gibson at 51, I think he's almost a lock for 25 points most nights. And Frank the Tank at 38, good record against this team, against the Timberwolves, but a lot of that was with Cody Zeller out last season, so I'm not really interested in him at 3,800. At centre, Code Zeller at 38, nah. Dwighty Howard, 7,500. Don't mind Howard. Centres have struggled against the Wolves. Not sure why, because Towns' defense has been pretty poor. But I like Dwighty at 7,500, while Towns is at 9,500. I'd go back onto him. But I'd probably lean more to tournaments for Towns. He's just been a little bit unreliable for cash recently. Over on DraftKings, I think Batum is a tournament option at 6,200. Then we've got Dwight at 7,000, Jim Butler at 75, which I love, and Kemba at 7,900 as all cash options over on DraftKings. The next game we'll take a look at, we've got the LA Clippers and the New York Knicks. The Knicks are favored by 1.5, and the total is 209.5 points. The Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, won't play, and Pat Beverly, Woj said that Beverly was going to play, and now he's listed as questionable, so we can assume that Bev is ready to go. On the Knicks side of things, Timmy Hardaway is dealing with foot soreness. If he doesn't play, I think we're going to be looking at Doug McDirt. You're going to be looking at a bit more Lance Thomas, maybe some Damian Dotson and some Michael Beasley, but McDirt would be the guy that would get the biggest boost, as I imagine. He would start at small forward and then move Courtney Lee down to the two, and you'd see some Nil Aquina-Jarrett Jack combination lineups as well. Speaking of Jarrett Jack, he's at 4,100, and I just don't see any point in using him. Nil Aquina's at $4,000. His numbers have dropped off quite a bit recently. He's got the steals upside, which makes him tournament considerable, but not much to look at. Pat Bevan, his first game back, I won't go for, while Sindarius Thornwell at 3,700. He's been all right. He's been doing some stuff, but not enough to really get me overly excited at this point. At shooting guard, Lou Williams is at $6,000. If Bev is out, I'm in on Lou. If Bev is in, it's tough to use him at $6,000. And Austin Rivers at 4,700 definitely gets that boost if Beverly is out. As for Hardaway, 6,700. If he plays, I'm okay with using him, but the unknown's going to steer me away. Wes Johnson at 43, just putting up big numbers. 26 in the last one, 50.5 in the one before that. At 4,300 with no Rooster, I'm in on using Wes, and I could very easily get burnt. One guy that I don't think I'll get burnt with is Courtney Lee. He's at 5,100. If you have Hardaway out, maybe he's a little bit more aggressive offensively, and that could give you a 30-ish point night from him, which would be a really decent return. As for McDirt at 3,200, he's just a shitful fantasy player, but the opportunity could be there to have a look at him in a tournament if Hardaway sits. At power forward, Porzingis. He is at 9,200. That's too high for me to look at him in cash. He's averaging just 38 over the last five. Nowhere near enough at that sort of a salary. So tournament, sure, but cash, no. I'd much rather take Blakey Griffin at 8,700, who's been putting up some pretty good numbers. He's got a good record of against the Knicks and against Porzingis as well. At center, Enes Kanter, 6,300. Too high when I don't know if I can rely on the minutes. On the flip side, you've got DeAndre Jordan, who he's up against, is at 7,600. I think a 40-pointer from DeAndre is a realistic expectation, so I do like using him here, whereas the cock monster, Kylo Quinn, 3,700, always a tournament option. He can go out there and drop 16, 6, and 6 with three blocks. He could do that. We've seen him do it in 20 minutes. There's just no reliability for him, and that's what makes him a tough guy to use in both DFS and in seasonal leagues. On DraftKings, you've got Wes Johnson for tournaments at 3,900, Blakey Griffin at 89, and Porzingis at 87. And for cash, I really like DeAndre Jordan at 6,600 over on DraftKings, and Courtney Lee at 4,600 as well. The next game we're going to take a look at is, who is it? It's the Washington Wizards. They are taking on the Milwaukee Bucks. No spread currently out for this one because we don't know the status of Johnny Wall. We know Matt Dellavedova and Mirza Teletovic are both doubtful for the Bucks. If Wall is out, then obviously Tim Frazier gets that bump, and you might consider Tomas Satoransky in GPP. I probably wouldn't, but Frazier becomes a guy that does have some value. Eric Bledsoe at 6,300. If we hear that Wall is out, I'm more interested in using Bledsoe, but even then, still more as a GPP guy. Wall at 95, I think I'd fade him even if he's ready to go. Tone Snell at 35, tournament option for me. Chrissy Middleton at 71, I like him for both cash and tournaments. While Malcolm Brogdon, 5,200, is averaging a paltry 15 points. across his last three, despite getting decent minutes in most of those games. Not really feeling too much here for Brogo, whereas Brad Beal at 79. No John Wall. I think that's a lock for cash. If Wall plays, it might be $400-$500 too high, so I'm not totally in on Beal if John is ready to go. At small forward, Yanni's at 12,000. Yes, it is expensive, but his lowest score over his last five has been 48. That's a pretty decent floor for a $12,000 guy. So I think you should feel a level of confidence about getting close to 50 at least with Yanni in your lineup. And then you've got Oubre at 4,200, which I want nothing to do with. At power forward, Otto Porter's at 65, just overpriced almost every DFS night, no interest. Whereas the Muppet, John Henson's at 5,200, only 9 points in 20 minutes for the Muppet. In that game against the Mavs where he was hacked, he'd been putting up some pretty decent numbers before that. So I am okay going back to the well, but Wizards have had a really good record with restricting opposition centers. So maybe Henson is in trouble there, but he is worth a look. Markeith's at 4,900, and we're not ready to go down that route yet. Gortat's at 4,600, a big one today. Clearly 40 points for Gortat, but only really looking at him as a tournament-type player. McCurr, Mahinmi, I can't really see how you would get excited about using those players. Over on DraftKings, you got Gortat and the Muppet as both tournament options. Gortat's at 53 and Henson is at 4,700. Then you got Middleton at 6,800, who I like for cash. And you got Yanni Adetokounmpo at 11,500, who is a very, very good cash play over on DraftKings. Next one up is the Portland Trailblazers and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Blazers are favored by 2, and the total is a very, very small 194 points. We've got Wayne Seldon out. We've got Brandon Wright out. We've got Mike Conley out, and we've got Tyreek Evans questionable. And if Evans is out, then I don't know what's going to happen. Lots of weird shit is going to go down. Mario Chalmers becomes an awesome option. Dylan Brooks gets a much bigger look offensively. Does Ben McLemore play close to 30 minutes? What about Chandler Parsons? How does he start to look? Does Jim Ennis get a bigger role? Lots of weird shit can go down with this Memphis lineup, and it's going to be hard to rely upon most of these guys in cash. They would look more to become tournament type options, these other guys, that even if we hear the news that Tyreek is out, using some of those shitful guys or some of those low-ish production type guys is going to be a risk even in cash. Now, Shabazz Napier, lots of minutes lately for Shabazz. 23 over his last three, averaging 20 points, 3,800. No real thought from Terry Stotts that he's going to go away from him. So maybe, but to me, the risk of him doing nothing based on poor shooting outweighs the upside that he actually gives. And that's not a good situation for DFS. I love Mario Chalmers here regardless of Tyreek's status. 5,400, I think that's almost a lock for cash. Lillard at 92, I think, is a really strong play as well. For the shooting guards, you've got Benny McLemore at 3,100. Love the upside here. A massive, massive upside, but no cash interest at all. Tyreek at 7,500 is probably just a little bit too expensive. Even with Mike Conley out at 7,500, that's a struggle to get behind that. Whereas CJ McCollum at $7,000, I think, is a really strong cash play. At small forward, Chandler Parsons at 4,200, started the last game, put up 21 points, and that's great. At 4,200, though, I would need Tyreek out and to consider him to get a little bit more usage, look to him to playmake a bit on the wings and get 5 to 6 assists potentially, and that would make him a nice GPP option in that scenario. Ennis, the same sort of story. Where's my man, Booksy? Dylan Brooks. Oh, there he is. He's at 4,400, Booksy. I would be interested in Brooks. He'd be one of those reserves that if Tyreek was out, I'd feel pretty good about in cash at 4,400. Then you've got on the other side, Mo Harkless and Evan Turner, who just are giving nothing, and I want nothing to do with using any of them. At power forward, Jermichael Green's at 4,700. Seeing nothing of use from him so far, so that's a no. Noah Vonleh, Ed Davis, the same. At center, the value is really there. I think for Marc Gasol at 8,200, totally in on Marc Gasol at 8,200. And then you've got Yusuf Nurkic at 73. Now, that's a good price for Nurk. There's some usability for tournaments, but Marc Gasol just really eats other centers. So that is a significant concern for Nurkic that I wouldn't use him in cash for that reason. Now, with Brandon Wright out, Deontay Davis will likely get those backup center minutes. And he is one of those players who can come in and have 5 blocks in 20 minutes or 18 minutes, very similar to the way Baby Noguera can do it. So at minimum salary, you could get 18 points out of him. If he gets 5 blocks, that's 15 points right there. Now, 5 might seem high, but he's one of those bouncy guys that can block a shot. The other team gets the offensive rebound, block a shot, offensive rebound, block a shot, and get 3 blocks in 2 minutes. He's one of those sort of guys that can do that. And that makes him a GPP type of option. Myers Leonard, also back in the rotation last game, had 19 points at 3,100. Maybe. But probably not, but maybe. So he is someone to definitely pay a level of attention to. On DraftKings tournaments, Nurkic at 6,700, which is a very good price. And if it wasn't against Marc Gasol, I'd look at that in cash. And you got Chandler Parsons at 37. And for cash, it's Mario Chalmers, 47. CJ's at 69. Marc Gasol's at 81. And Dame Lillard at a really good price of 8,300 is a strong option over on DraftKings. All right, let's go to the next game now. We're going to look at the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are taking on the New Orleans Pelicans. The Thunder are favored by 2.5, and the total is 214.5. Tone Davis is probable with that facial contusion after the knock to the head. Tone Allen is probable with left knee inflammation as well. So both of those guys are likely to play. With that being the case, unlikely that Sheck Diallo even sees the court at all in the rotation, and Ian Clark's probably not going to see the court either. At point guard, Rondo, $5,000. He had 24 points in 25 minutes in the last one. Now that he's up to 5,000, I don't know what his minutes are going to be just yet. I don't think he's going to be back to full 30 minutes, so I think he's probably a fade here. Well, Westbrook is down to 9,900. He has struggled all season, has not reached 5x value, even at that salary, once at all in the last 2 weeks. But Westbrook at 9,000, it's like a bull in a red towel. It's just like, how can you resist it? Like, how can you resist it? He hasn't reached over 47 points in the last 5 games either. But at 9,900, you really do have to consider it. Jrue Holiday is at 6,300. Currently listed as a point guard. That will change at some point soon, I believe. I don't mind that. For Jrue, 6,300, I think there's some cash use in using him there. At shooting guard, Andre Robertson, 38. Nah, we're good. Etuan Moore at 4,600. Tournament, maybe, but the upside is pretty limited, so that's probably a no. Dante Cunningham is always a no matter what the question is, while Paul George at 8,500 has been putting up close to 40 most nights recently, but 8,500, probably just a little bit too high. In a tournament, I'd feel much more comfortable. At power forward, Tone Davis is at 10,800. In this matchup, Steve Adams, Paul George, Andre Robertson, all these defensive guys, I think tournaments only for Davis, and I'll say the same thing for Boog as well, whereas Mallow's at 6,700, and I think that's a decent cash look there for Carmelo Anthony. Jeremy Grant at 4,300, too highly priced with everyone back. At center, Boogie's at 11,500, tournaments for me, while Steve Adams is at 6,200. Now, Steve had 31 points in his first game back, played 35 minutes, and now we've got to take on Boog and Davis. I just think 6,200 is probably just a little bit too high for Big Adamsy. Adamsy didn't work at all. I was trying to roll that off. Just didn't happen. Not much I love on DraftKings for this game. I like Cousins at 10,900 for a tournament. I like Jrue as a tournament play at 6,400. And Tone Davis, I'm more interested in him in cash over on DraftKings at the price of 9,800. I feel much more comfortable with that price over on DraftKings than I do with him over on FanDuel. All right, let's go on to the next game now. We're talking about the Atlanta Hawks and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 9.5, and the total is 203.5 points. Mike Muscala, Miles Plumlee, DeAndre Bembry, and Luke Babbitt are all listed as probable. Muscala apparently was ready to go in the last game, didn't see the court at all. Ersan Ilyasova was healthy and out of the rotation too, so there's a real chance that Ilyasova doesn't play here, as well as Muscala. With the guy getting the benefit of those minutes is Tyler Cavanaugh, who's hitting his threes at like 67% this season, which of course is not going to be able to stick. For the point guards, DeJounte Murray's at 3,700. I want nothing to do with that whatsoever. Delaney at 3,100. Malcolm Delaney's been getting like 20, 25 minutes a night, which is weird. I think in a tournament, you could consider Delaney as part of your player pool, whereas Dennis Schroeder should be in your tournament pool, should be in your cash pool at 7,100. Got a nice 31-point average over his last 5. Feel pretty good about using Dennis Schroeder. Pat Mills at 48. Manu's at 35, not interested in that. Dan Green is a tournament guy who had 47 in his last game, Danny Green. He's at 5,200, but I wouldn't feel great about that for cash. Same with Kent Bazemore at 56. Both of those guys are fairly strong tournament plays, as is Marco Bellinelli at 3,900. I might even consider Bellinelli for cash, despite a real turd last game. At small forward, Kyle Anderson's at 52. I lock that in for cash. I think that's 25. You're almost guaranteed to get that with Kyle Anderson. Torian Prince is at 5,800. If it wasn't the Spurs, I'd feel a little bit more comfortable, not feeling strongly about him. Rudy Gay, no interest, and DeAndre Bembry played 1 minute in his return, so I don't think we'll be looking down that route. Johnny Collins, the Baptist, $5,000 for Collins. He had 30 points in 25 minutes in the last one. He'll be playing pretty much exclusively centre with Dwayne Dedmon, so it's hard to rely upon him for cash, but we know if he gets 26 minutes, then he's smashing through that value, so that makes him a GPP guy. Tyler Cavanagh at 34. The minutes were okay. The production's not fantastic. While Aldridge at 86, probably only plays three quarters, but could very easily get those 40 points. I think he's a good play. Lukey Babbitts at 33. No. Centre. Powell, $6,200. Got a very good record against Atlanta. They're probably a bit high. I'd look at him as a tournament punt, but that's probably about it. Whereas the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedmon, $5,500. If you want to subscribe to Revenge Games, he, I'm sure, would have been pissed about not playing in the playoffs and the fact that they didn't even try to sign him. So maybe there's something there. $5,500 for the Undertaker. Clearly got big upside, 40-point upside. He had a 56-pointer the other day against the Kings. He is an upside GPP sort of a player, but not a cash guy. On DraftKings tournaments, it's the Undertaker, it's Kent Bazemore, and for cash, I like Torian Prince, I like Dennis Schroeder and Aldridge. Bazemore's at 4,900, which is a strong price, and Deadman's at 5,000. Prince is at 48, which I really, really like. Schroeder's at 6,300, which I also like, and Aldridge at 8,200. All right, let's move on to the next one. It's Boston and Dallas. The Celtics are favored by 7.5, and the total is 196.5. Dorian Finney-Smith is questionable with knee tendonitis, may or may not be in the rotation anyway, so probably not going to make too much of a difference. At point guard, you've got Yogi Ferrell at 4,000, played 33 minutes in the last game. His earning potential is not really all that high. You might look in a tournament, but I think there are better guys out there, much like Dennis Smith at 6,300. Well, not much like. I think he is one of the guys that I would be looking at in a tournament with 50-point upside, definitely worth the look. Kyrie is at 8,500. I feel pretty good about Kyrie in cash and in tournaments. Shooting guard, Wes Matthews had a monster in his last one. He's at 5,200, but prior to that, had not got really all that close to getting enough value, so I'm not feeling much there. Marcus Smart at 54 is not strong. JJ Barea, Devin Harris, not interested. At small forward, the pencil, Harrison Barnes, 6,900. And against a good defensive team, that's just too high, even for cash for Harrison Barnes. Whereas Jaylen Brown's at 6,500. Has been putting up some real, real big performances, but that salary is now matching that. I'd feel all right about him in a tournament, but I really don't feel confident with his floor just at this point. At power forward, Jason Tatum's been moved to a power forward on FanDuel. $5,700 for Tatum. I much prefer using him to Jaylen. That's an extra $800. He's still averaging 31 points himself. I think that's a much better option to use Jason Tatum. Dirk's at 47. Playing all right lately, Dirk, but not reliable. Dwighty Powell at 34 and Marcus Morris at 48. Not interested in any of those guys. At center, Al Horford, 7,200. I think that's a tournament guy for Horford. Doesn't seem to miss, but his numbers haven't been all that high recently. And the other centers are Mejri, Noel, and Baines, and not really a lot to see with any of those guys. On DraftKings, you've got Dennis Smith as a GPP guy at 5,800. Then Harrison Barnes at 58 is a cash option. Really like the pencil there. And Kyrie at 85, I think, is a pretty strong cash play also. All right, the last game of the night, we've got the Denver Nuggets backing it up against the Sacramento Kings. We don't know the status of Paul Millsap at this point. If Millsap is out, then expect more Wancho, expect more Farton, Will Barton, Wilson Chandler, Ken Fareed, and Trey Lyles. With none of those guys, maybe you'd throw Fareed into a GPP, but Wancho, Lyles, not interested. Barton and Chandler, maybe. On the Kings side of things, Vince Carter has kidney stones. Not convinced that he'll be back into the rotation even when he's back. The one you want to look at is Budrick Hield, though, who's missed the last game with an ankle. If he is out, then we're going to have more minutes for Frank Mason. At point guard, De'Aaron Fox, who's starting at the moment, 4,800. I think there's a tournament. It's really hard to use any of these Kings guys in cash, by the way. Fox is a tournament player at 4,800. Georgie Hill's Hill's probably the only Kings guy I like in cash here, 4,500. Got a good track record behind him that now the minutes are stabilized, he's looking okay. I feel that he can get to me 25 points. I feel okay about him in cash. The Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray at 56, just an upside tournament guy. And Frank Mason at 33, probably nothing to see there. At shooting guard, Temple's at 3,700. Garrett Temple, no. Bogdan Bogdanovic, no. Budrick Heald, 4,300. We don't know if he's going to play, so that's a no. Well, Farton, Will Barton's at 5,800. If we see that he is starting, I would look to use him. Otherwise, he's just a tournament sort of a guy. And Gaz Harris at 57. And I'm on Gaz Harris at 57. I think that there is some cash usability with him. At small forward, the baby neck, Wilson Chandler, 4,900. I'm fine with using that. His numbers have been good lately. Could have an increased role. Totally fine with using him, especially for cash. Power forward, Labissiere is starting and getting no minutes, so that's cool. He's at 3,800, tournaments only, while Zach Randolph at 46. I can't really, in all good conscience, recommend him. At Paulie Millsap at 7,500. Well, we don't know if he's going to play, so I think that he's a fade in this back-to-back situation. At centre, Jokic at 9,300. I don't think he's going to be suspended for his issues, so a real chance for him to drop 50 here. I like using Jokic. Cauley Stein's been big lately. Yeah, two big 30-plus minute games. 5,300 for Cauley Stein. Who knows what Jaeger's going to do, but I would feel much better about using Cauley Stein today than I would have, say, last Monday. Costa Kufos and Mason Plumlee, no real interest in either of those guys in this one. All right, let's go on to the other... I should go to DraftKings first, actually, and talk about some cash play or tournament plays. Mason at $3,000, maybe if Budrick's out. Skell at 3,600 is a GPP guy. Cauley Stein at 45 and Fox at 46. And for cash, it's Jokic at 91, Barton at 55 and Georgie Hill at 4,100. Let's go on to the other DFS sites. Talk Yahoo, some GPP guys, Jermichael Green, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Yogi Ferrell, The Blue Arrow, Skell, Chandler Parsons, Willie Cauley-Stein, The Undertaker. I think that's all of the GPP sort of guys over on Yahoo. Yep. When we look at cash, we've got Joel Embiid. We have also got Georgie Hill, Kyle Korver, Corey Joseph, and Courtney Lee as some decent cash plays over on Yahoo. On Moneyball, GPPs, Cauley Stein, Wes Johnson, Alfred Payton, De'Aaron Fox, Parsons, Korver, Labissiere, The Baptist, Gortat, Porzingis. And then we're going to talk some cash options also. Let's go back to those. Chalmers, Wade, Reggie Jackson, Nikola Jokic, Yanni Adetokounmpo, Toby Harris, some decent cash plays over on Moneyball. And for Draft Stars tournaments, Lord Alfred, Channing Frye, Jermichael Green, De'Aaron Fox, Skell Labissiere, Dennis Smith Jr., Russ Westbrook, also an option over on Draft Stars. And for cash guys, Shabazz Napier, Mo Spates, Dwight Howard, Yusuf Nurkic, Kyle Korver, Jarepko, Vooch, Reggie Jackson, Johnny Henson, The Muppet, Nikola Jokic, Yanni, Embiid, Davis, and Cousins coming up over there on Draft Stars. All right, guys, don't forget to check out the Locked On Podcast Network. Check out LockedOnFantasyBasketball.com and BasketballMonster.com and follow me on Twitter at RedRock_Bball. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Joel Embiid.